right now.
Right now.
Chris Bryant, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Austin Price for News Radio 92.3.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, is the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 8:09 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock here on Saturdays when there are not FSU games going on. Also, the Pensacola Movie Club, follow them on Facebook, get together, watch movies, and talk about it. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
So you said that Practical Magic 2 is the big release this week?
Yeah, apparently looks like it's going to be the one to finally knock Spider-Man off the top of the box office, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, who knew that there was so much interest in this, I guess now it's a franchise because we have a second one, so I guess now it becomes a franchise.
But it's the same women, it's the same cast, basically?
Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, yes, two Academy Award-winning actresses.
Yeah?
Leading this film. Luckily for everybody involved, this is probably pretty much critic proof. I guess there are a lot of people that really did love this first one, and it does look like it's going to do very well, but it is not doing very well with the critics.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
30 to the tune of about 35% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, okay.
The first one, they were trying to overcome this family curse that any man that fell in love with one of these women who had these magically powered women in this family was to die. It looked like they broke the curse at the end of the first one. Guess what? They didn't break the curse.
Of course not. I mean, you can't have a sequel without a problem, right?
Yeah. So now they're trying to break the curse for the sake of the next generation of the women and their family.
Okay. All right. So I had never thought of Practical Magic as I couldn't even tell you the plot. I don't remember. I mean, other than what you've just told me, I don't remember it. I'm sure I've seen it, but wasn't the movie screaming for a sequel to me? But for some people, apparently, yes. So
and it was a successful novel. There was a successful sequel to the novel. So
I got you.
There's source material out there at least.
The movie is Hope. What's this?
Oh yes, this is a Korean film about a sheriff and a deputy who are forced to face some kind of mysterious creature that is killing people along with a hunting party that's isolated in the woods. Sounds very simplistic. This is a film that was considered good enough to compete for the Palme d'Or. If you've ever seen any Korean science fiction horror films, they can be something really special. And this one appears to be the same. There's also a few Western actors that are in this. So it's not just Korean actors. I'm very interested in this film. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I've talked to a couple of friends that have, and they said it was outstanding. Reviews are pretty good, 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, so very much looking forward to this one.
Okay, so, if you want to, for context for Korean sci-fi, I think like, Squid Game, was that Korean or Japanese? Now, all of a sudden, I doubt myself. Parasite.
Squid Game was Korean. Yeah, okay. Parasite is Korean also.
There you go.
I think more in the terms of... what is the film called? The Host, I believe it was.
Okay.
Which was Bong Joon-ho's, one of his earlier films.
Okay.
I think this is more in that vein.
I gotcha. The Uprising with Andrew Garfield?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting, too. This is based on the historic figure who was the inspiration for Robin Hood.
Oh, okay.
And, who led an uprising against the king when the taxation got out of hand. People were living in squalor while the king was living in grandeur. Only okay reviews on this though.
Okay, Runner.
This is starring Alan Ritchson and Owen Wilson. This kind of an unlikely duo. They play people who are in the when you have an organ transplant, they have to deliver the organ. They are those kinds of people, and in the course of trying to do their work and get an organ to a child that's about to die, they run afoul of some kind of nefarious people, and they're having to try to survive and get the organ to this child.
Okay, so the premise is a clock limit based on the organ survivability and getting it to the person who's going to, you know, die without. Okay, all right, I got you.
Right. Pretty decent reviews on this, running in the high 60s on Rotten Tomatoes. Of course, you know, Richland is a local. Well, first of all, he's a Crestview native. Went to high school with a friend of mine, in fact. I also went to high school with Matt Gaetz. Which is interesting if you know anything about Richland's background. They're apparently in debate together too. So that's a really interesting concept.
Yeah, that's
concept
an interesting thing to kind of imagine. All right,
yeah.
A movie,
of course, Reacher. Yeah, so
movie about a band, Oasis. Don't Look Back in Anger.
Yeah, this is a documentary on the recent reunion tour that was put on by the maybe the fifth or sixth best Britpop band that was. In existence, you know, put them behind Blur and Pulp and Elastica and Lush, and maybe we'll take that. But everybody else thinks they're the greatest band that ever walked on the planet, and they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. All 9 years. I'm in a minority opinion on that. Like them fine, just don't think they're the best band that came out of that era.
We've also
great reviews on the documentary, by the way. This is the best review movie of the week.
Oh, okay, all right. We're all totally out of time, but The Fix and Don't Move are also out. Are either one of them worth seeing?
The Fix is Liam Neeson going to Liam Neeson along with Zachary Levi,
okay.
And Don't Move is not screened for critics.
I see. All right, so we know what we need to know about that. What are you going to watch next week?
Not 100% sure yet, but as soon as we do, we will have that up on Facebook.
Very good. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays. Are you on tomorrow or not on tomorrow?
We're on tomorrow.
Okay, very good. FSU games, I never know. That's why I always ask. And the Pensacola Movie Club, follow them on Facebook. Julio, as always, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
8:15 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. What does Brother Andrew think about the $5,000 checks from President Trump and justice for Africa in maps? Coming up next in the Transgressive Memorial Service, PJ has traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash, Michigan Avenue at Mobile Highway in Pensacola. No roadblock there. Also have a vehicle crash, Blue Angel Parkway at Dog Track Road in Pensacola. And then finally have a vehicle crash with injuries, U.S. 90 at Avalon Boulevard in Milton. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, Dave Ramsey here. You've heard me talk about one car dealership in Pensacola, Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. Folks, new cars lose 11% of their value the second you drive them off the lot. So for years, Frontier Motors has been saving Pensacola residents thousands of dollars by getting them into the best previously owned vehicles. And thousands of people have enjoyed Frontier Motors' no hassle, no pressure experience. Just the best slightly used vehicles in town at a fair price. But don't take my word for it. Look around, and you'll start noticing all the Frontier Motors decals and tags. They're everywhere. So if you're in the market for a vehicle, do yourself a favor and see the friendly folks and the huge inventory at Frontier Motors. You can't miss them. Just look for the big buffalo on the lot. That's Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. And don't forget to tell them Dave Ramsey said hey.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Sky, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Sky, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Tune into Transcending the Money Myth, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than just investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Transcending the Money Myth, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC, registered advisors.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
So what did I miss today?
Good question.
I'm Andrew McKay.
Chris Bryan.
Austin Price.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Well, there you have it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
First, Hollywood. For refusing to fund the groundbreaking Lily Wachowski project, The Hunted, a dystopian political thriller with an entirely transgender cast and needing a mere $10 million to start production. As you all know, Lily and her sister Lana were once misidentified male at birth and made several blockbuster films such as Speed Racer, Cloud Atlas, V for Vendetta, and The Matrix trilogy under the dead name The Wachowski Brothers, but both are now fully transitioned trans women. Despite her creative and money-making track record, Lily Wachowski has so far failed to get backers for the film, precisely because it features an entirely transgender cast, which is just proof that despite Hollywood generally being a domain of near-total wokeness, the degree of commitment to the cause is still far too low. Until Hollywood is willing to pony up a meager $10 million for a depressing political passion project that will almost certainly lose money at the box office, how can we know they are serious about their they-ness? Now, obviously, a film that is entirely trans does raise some interesting questions for us. For example, if trans women and cis women are both fully women, then why does a movie about trans women have to be cast with only trans women? If anyone can identify as anything, why can't anyone act the part of anything? And if only trans women are supposed to be hired to portray trans women, does that mean that only cis women are supposed to be hired to portray cis women? If so, that would seem to severely limit the roles that trans actresses might be hired to perform. As some blasphemers have recently put the question, if a cis woman putting on trans face is wrong, isn't it also wrong for a trans woman to put on cis face? No, dear Uthran, you err because you know neither the scriptures of wokeness nor the power of the holy acronym string. What does Yorkett's third postulate of eternal gender justice teach us? And I quote, because the straight cisgender power structures are so designed to marginalize LGBTQIA2S+ persons, any outcome which transfers power or representation to them is inherently just, and any outcome which transfers power or representation away from them is inherently unjust. It's that simple, my comrades. Any such questions only deceive you into thinking that logic is our primary governing principle rather than emotion, a mistake that you learned when you memorized the very first principle of wokeness. Strong feelings are always right, and logic and facts must be governed by them, not the other way around. So shame on you, Hollywood, for not funding such an obvious virtue signal of a movie, and shame on you, heretics, for attempting to subvert the holy cause of wokeness with your appeal to logic and principles. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, this is now 2 weeks in a row that I'm forced to do this, but we want to praise President Not Gonna Mention His Name's surprisingly good work this week at the Republican midterm convention in Dallas. As everyone has by now heard, the leader of the GOP promised to pay every adult citizen in the United States a $5,000 prosperity dividend if voters returned a Republican majority of the House of Representatives and the Senate in November. The details here are still a bit, how to say, sketchy, like lines hastily drawn with a Sharpie on a hurricane map of Alabama. But he did say it has to be spent in the United States and is intended to let Americans share in what he claims is the great wealth of the country under his leadership. Now, it's true the president doesn't have the authority to do this himself, needing Congress to authorize the more than $1 trillion payout, but it would be legal since it goes to all adults and not only to those who vote for Republicans. Once again, we're shocked to find ourselves as faithful congregants of the 17th First Partial Gospel Tabernacle of Eternal Wokeness, Los Angeles Synod Unreformed, having to celebrate something President Bleep has done. For one thing, it's a massive redistribution of wealth from people who earn very much to people who earn very little. Obviously, the wealthy will be paying for this through income taxes, and since everyone gets paid, even those who do no work at all, it's the sort of thing any democratic socialist should be proud of. And that's why we're cheering for the acknowledgement that conservatism is truly dead. Even as our dear allies in the DSA are notching legislative and electoral win after win after win, having virtually taken over the entire Democratic Party, The Republicans have now completely abandoned even the pretense of believing in limited government, free enterprise, self-reliance, and individual rewards based on individual effort. Even people who do nothing to help the Republican win will be paid the same as those who actually do the work and cast the votes to make it happen. Just like in socialism. Everyone gets the same amount, no matter whether they do the work or not. And even as he promises this massive redistribution of wealth, he claims to be doing it in the name of defeating socialism. Such doublespeak is beyond even our ability to invent. The unnameable one is admitting that traditional conservatism is over. It's only a matter of how much socialism there will be. Which we've long known this is true with Social Security, progressive taxation, our favorite kind of taxation, if only for the name, the redistributionist model for property taxes where those with more pay more, estate tax, EBT, SNAP, subsidized health care, and the entire system of public education. Finally, the right has embraced the left, and it's only a matter of minor differences over social issues that divide us now. So well done, President, we still can't say it, by the way. Well done for literally offering to bribe your supporters something only Democrats have been able to successfully do in every recent election. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's bamboo rain stick of justice with three organic hemp tassels goes to one of our all-time favorite institutions of wisdom and wokeism, the United Nations, for their amazingly bold vote to encourage countries to move away from the Mercator projection map of the world and towards the equal Earth map. The reason is so simple. The Mercator map makes countries far from the equator seem much larger in landmass than they are in reality, and by contrast, makes countries near the equator seem much smaller than they actually are. For example, Mercator portrays Greenland as roughly the same size as the entire continent of Africa, even though Africa is actually 14 times as large as Greenland. Mercator portrays the United States and Europe, each as being roughly as large as Africa, and even though both are only about one-third the area in reality. In fact, all of the U.S., China, India, and most of Europe could fit inside of Africa with room left over for Japan. So from a simple accuracy standpoint, using a map which more faithfully reflects the relative sizes of these regions is obvious. But as you all know, telling the truth is only one of our concerns. Making hurt people feel better? Now that's the real stuff. As the UN resolution explains at great length, the use of Mercator for several hundred years has done injury to the reputational significance of Africa, symbolically minimizing it and its importance in the collective global imagination, causing Africa and African peoples to be undervalued despite the massive size of their landmass, and having the same effect on Latin America and South Asia too. Never in the history of personkind has there been such a systemically ruthless tool for marginalizing an entire people group as the Mercator projection map. This map, made by a white European, unsurprisingly, makes white European and white North America look massive, clearly a tool of white supremacy culture. Even as the African Union's representative, Robert Dussey, said, a fair map does not change the geography of the world, it changes how we see the world. As the resolution states, using the Equal Earth map, which shows the proper size relationships between countries, quote, constitutes an act of cognitive justice and memorial reparation. That's right. Finally, this map can restore Africa to its proper position of prominence in the global mind and return to Africans the cognitive reparations due them for all these years of stolen reputational size. And should it come as any surprise to you, dear Utherin, that the UN vote was 164-1, with only the United States voting to deprive Africa, Latin America, and South Asia of an accurate representation of their size and significance? Is it any wonder that dead white guys favored a map to make their geographic manhood seem larger and to make that of other races seem smaller? The UN literally said in their resolution that Mercator maps impose, quote, a proportional shrinkage upon Africa. George Costanza couldn't have said it better himself.
Look, you don't understand. There was shrinkage.
Well, we are here to say it's about time to throw some cold water on the falsely enlarged geographic self-image of the Europeans and the Americans. As we all know, it's the size of the continent that matters, not how you use it. So we're here to say with the world, let the size of Africa be restored and let the shrinkage be imposed on the white man for a change. So we are with the UN and we stand against the white supremacy culture of Europe and the United States. We stand for redistributing cartographic justice to Africa, and we declare that Africa is massive and Europe and America are small. And we are here to emphatically say that black maps matter. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
828 News Radio 92.3. And yes, I've had several people texting me in that about that great West Wing episode that dealt with this specifically. I think I warned you earlier in the week that this particular one might be coming on the maps. Remember, I don't make up the stories. I just tell them to you funny. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Still working that vehicle crash, Michigan Avenue and Mobile Highway in Pensacola. No roadblock associated with that. Also, I have that vehicle crash with injuries, US 90 at Avalon Boulevard in Milton. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. Of course, today is 9/11. Florida Senator Rick Scott weighing in on that yesterday.
I was in New York City that day. I was in close. I was up about 60th, so I wasn't close to the World Trade Center. But it was horrible. I know people that died.
And of course, the first plane hitting the towers here at 8:03, 25 years ago today. Anthropic, Andrew, is saying that they have noticed people using AI for biological research or biohazardous research.
That's fine.
It's a good use for it, right?
It's fine.
And a Uganda.
Why use real bats when you can just use digital experimental bats? It's fine. Good deal.
And a Ugandan news anchor has been chosen as the next monarch of the Toro Kingdom following the death of King Oyo Nayibu.
Man, I've been waiting for this. Thank you.
Yeah, that guy, the fourth. This Ugandan news anchor is expected to be crowned this week.
He just sent me an email about helping him get his money out of Uganda. So, like, this is very timely for me. I appreciate
that. I'm just hoping making news anchors the monarch of societies becomes a regular thing.
Let's do it. Let's do it. King David the Fourth. Why not?
Fox News, I'm Angelo Bavaro.
Oh, say can you see?
The 9/11 remembrance ceremony now underway in New York City.
Today, Vice President J.D. Vance will be here as long as with the four former living presidents and their wives, the officials and family members. There will be the four moments of silence.
That is Fox's Eric Shawn earlier this morning. The GOP wrapped up its midterm convention in Dallas Thursday, the president and VP addressing that crowd.
The vice president made no mention of the $5,000 checks that President Trump teased if Republicans keep their majorities in Congress, but the president brought it up again. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget says the president's plan would amount to $1.2 trillion, adding that tariff revenues would not be enough to offset the cost.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. America is listening to Fox News.
It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. Cloudy. It's been rainy all morning, and we'll get a look at our forecast from Channel 3 in just a couple of minutes. Well, Ivy Kate was born at just 22 weeks, weighed less than a pound, with only a 10% chance of survival. Now, she's almost 2 years old. She returned to the Studer Family Children's Hospital on Thursday to reunite with the team that saved her.
It's absolutely amazing to see where she was and where she's at now, and to come back in, see the people who treated her. It's always, it's always an emotional thing, honestly.
And that is Ivy's father, Brandon Haskew. He talked to Channel 3, and the visit came during NICU Awareness Month, a chance to honor babies like Ivy Kate and the medical teams who care for them. Well, it is, of course, the 25th anniversary of 9/11. Communities across Northwest Florida honoring the anniversary today with several public events. NAS Pensacola is hosting a public remembrance ceremony at 9:30 this morning at the Blue Angels Atrium. Milton holding a ceremony later on this evening. That'll be at 6:45 at Jernigan's Landing, and that'll feature an honor guard flyover, bagpipe tribute, and the city's Bands on the Blackwater concert. Fort Walton Beach inviting the public to ring the fire station bell. And that's, that already happened this morning at 7:45. And Escambia County Commissioners did not take any action yesterday on setting hearings for a data center moratorium. That ban, they said, is already in place. County Attorney Allison Rogers told commissioners the county's land development code already prohibits data centers. And so the commissioners approved that ban last month following a resolution in July officially declaring data centers inappropriate for Escambia County. It's been more than a week now since PPD and other local agencies turned off their license plate reading cameras, a move that followed the state ordering the devices removed from state highways. Now investigators say the camera's absence is being felt. This is after that drive-by shooting at Vibes and Smoothies on Sunday.
Well, I can tell you that we haven't had any arrests because of that, because they're off. There's going to be more, unfortunately, more instances where we could have used those cameras and we can't. We have to go back, and we're not going to give up. We have the best detectives in the country, and we're going to keep working these calls, working these crimes and these cases. And it may take us a bit longer, but we're going to do what we do with or without the cameras.
And that's PPD's Mike Wood, who says another recent incident involved a report of a woman being forcefully abducted into a vehicle. Nothing came of that report without being able to identify the vehicle through the ALPR cameras. PPD's chief has said the department will just be waiting for legislative clarity before considering the possibility of bringing those cameras back. Well, free emergency response training is happening for local hospitality workers. A training session is scheduled for Wednesday.
Visit Pensacola, teaming up with Ascension Sacred Heart Pensacola to provide free emergency response training. This is for local hospitality workers. The training's part of the Summer Safe Pensacola series and will prepare workers for emergencies with hands-on response training. The event's scheduled at the Perdido Key Visitor Center on Wednesday, September 16th. Chris Bryan, News Radio 92.3.
Thank you very much, Chris. And at 8:35, let's check in with PJ, who's got our traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash, Michigan Avenue, on Mobile Highway in Pensacola. No roadblock associated with that. Also have an object in the roadway, I-110 northbound, right near Fairfield. Use caution there. And then finally have a vehicle crash with injuries, U.S. 90 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. No roadblock. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much. Channel 3 forecast.
Here at ORNDC, scattered showers and thunderstorms today. 80% chance of rain. High near 88 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. For Saturday, 70% chance of your showers and thunderstorms. High near 89. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 77. Heading into Sunday, a 50% chance of your showers and thunderstorms. High near 89 degrees. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 77 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now it's 73 degrees with cloudy skies across the area. Been seeing rain on and off through the morning, and we'll be watching that here as the day progresses. Your money now this morning. Taking a look at our opening markets from Wall Street. They are up today. The Dow's up 1.25%, 52,711.89. The S&P 500 up just over 1%, 76.7097. NASDAQ is up just over 1% as well at 26.352.122. Taking a look at the 10-year bond yield, it is down just a bit, 4.92% this morning. Turning to commodities, gold is up 21.80 at 44.2930. That's a half percent. Silver prices are up 54 cents at 65.46. Bitcoin is up 121.37 this morning, 77,255.70. And looking at those oil prices, West Texas Intermediate down 323, 99.25 a barrel. Brent crude down $3.11, trading at 104.52 per barrel. Well, what's that mean for our gas prices? The national average up again at 429 a gallon today for a gallon of regular. Escambia County seeing average prices right under $4 at $3.96 a gallon. Santa Rosa County seeing their average right at $4 per gallon. Consumer prices rose more than expected for August. According to the latest government report, the consumer price index increased 0.4% for the month, putting the annual inflation rate at 3.4%. Core prices, excluding food and energy, we're up 0.3%, that report coming out ahead of next week's Federal Reserve meeting. Melinda French Gates is matching the $10 million proceeds raised by Olivia Rodrigo's Daisy Chain Fields Music Festival. And that means that 10 participating nonprofits, including Planned Parenthood, Baby to Baby, and Free From, will each receive $2 million. The festival featured performances by artists, including Chappelle Roan and Doshal, and donated all of its proceeds to the nonprofits. Your next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you. On your phone, on your computer, wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter, even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Everybody jump! 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 Jump!
I said a hip. The hibbit of a hip, hip hobby, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It means it's an opportunity for me to talk with a couple of friends here in studio. One, a longtime sufferer. I mean, featured participant. I mean, he suffers having to come on with me. But Josh Newby, the executive director for the Council on Aging West Florida, also. My brother in Leap.
Yeah. And also lead broadcaster of a totemic entry in Pensacola Morning News a couple weeks ago, which I
okay,
Owens.
Fair enough. Yeah, sure yeah, enough. Yeah. What does totemic
history
mean? You want to tell me what totemic means?
Like signature, important, you know, defining.
You just come in here with your liberally words and you think
three
the world
syllables
gonna be impressed by you.
Yeah.
We also have retired now. Captain Scott Janik, he was the Commodore for the Wing and the Aviation Safety School and, man, a lot of other things. He was also, leaving NAS Pensacola during 9/11 or right about there?
Flying out of it.
Flying out of it.
I was an instructor at VT-86, so I was airborne right now, 25 years
ago. Wow. We'll talk about that in a second, but I do want to give you credit. And I will always say this every time you're on the air. One of my favorite things we ever did on this show was the series on tenant commands for NAS Pensacola and Corey Station, Whiting. And had I not known Scott Janik, Mongo call sign, that series wouldn't have happened. Or it would have been like two episodes instead of, you know, 13 or whatever it was, because you were so instrumental. So I will always appreciate you for that. So, yeah, what were you doing on 9/11 25 years ago? As we're now, like, we just had, this would have been about 4 minutes ago at 8:37 our time, American Flight 77 hit the Pentagon 25 years ago. Just
yep.
Now. Like, man. Like, so you're in the air at the time.
I was in the air. So I was, we called in an out and in, took off from NAS Pensacola, launched around 6:50 a.m.
Okay.
And we were flying a low-level route up around the Chattanooga area, land, get gas, and then fly back to students.
As part of training for the wing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was a lieutenant instructor.
Training backseat pilot, training backseaters,
right? Backseaters,
okay.
Naval flight officers, right?
Yep.
So, and at this instance, the student on the first flight was actually at the time we were instructing Air Force, the 479th
okay.
Air
yeah,
Force
the flying
wing.
Training group.
We
okay.
used to do their training here in the Navy squadron. So it was an Air Force student and his last flight. He does that flight successfully. He gets his wings, and he's done with training and off to the Air
okay.
Force he goes.
Got it.
So we were doing a low level, and as you know, looking at the clock, 25 years ago, right now is when they shut the airspace down. But
yeah.
when you're doing a low level, you're not talking to anybody. And about 3 minutes, so at 9:45 Eastern, we had finished the route, popped off, so climbing up to go land, checked in with Atlanta Center. And they told us we needed to, you know, the controller's words were, you need to land wherever you can, as soon as you can. I'm about to lose the system. So that's all we got.
And you didn't know anything.
That's all we heard. I actually, and turned to the pilot, contract pilot. He
yeah.
was a retired Air Force F-4 pilot, Argo was a call sign. Great dude. But he and I kind of looked at each other and we're like, oh, Y2K is a year late.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Y2K, the computers are, and you always heard about FAA computers, you know,
sure.
needing to get updated. So we just saw it. All the radars were going down and the computers were going down. Turned to Chattanooga. It was only a quick flight, only about 5 minutes from Chattanooga. Landed there, and we taxied off the runway and go into a fixed-based operations FBO where civilian planes and military planes get gas, and called ground control to taxi, and they said planes have hit the World Trade Centers, plane just hit the Pentagon, and that's why you guys were told to land. And, you know, walked in FBO, and the sliding glass doors open as I walked in to watch the South Tower.
It's all on TV, yeah. Ugh. So. Wow. And then you obviously have experienced now, Josh, you were – I kind of made a joke about this earlier. You were alive.
I was in eighth grade.
Okay, there you go.
Yes, I was.
Kids.
Very conscious, very aware of the world, as we all were.
What happened?
Were you in school at the time?
I was
in Miss Davis's eighth grade class at Sims Middle School. I remember they pulled the TV in, put on the news. It was about an hour later, parents started showing up to pick up kids because it was just mass confusion. We had no idea at the time that it was a terrorist attack. We thought it was just this widespread airline catastrophe. And then I remember watching the news the rest of the day at my parents' house and just being it just felt like that, you know, that curtain between America and the rest of the world had been punctured.
Yeah.
You know, and that this was now a reality for us. It was what a confusing, weird, awful day.
I remember I was actually driving from, I was teaching philosophy, and I was driving from one school to the other because, you know, when you're an adjunct, they make it so you can only teach three or maybe four classes at one school because they don't want to take advantage of you. So what adjuncts wind up doing is teaching seven courses at four different schools, you know, and it's actually worse than if we could just all teach it at one. But I was driving from one class that just finished, and I was going to another class at Harris Stowe State College in downtown St. Louis. And basically, you know, I heard it on KMOX. They were talking about it, of course, on the radio. And I pulled in, walked in, and in the cafeteria, everybody's watching on TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I actually did something I think was kind of unusual. We had class, and I did class. And I had class that night, and we did class, too. And because my theory was, you know what? Terrorists don't get to win. We're going to do what we do. I know not everybody did it that way, but that's what we did. They didn't cancel class at the community college I was teaching at that night, so.
But I was only 13 at the time, so my memory might be hazy. But it was pretty late in the day that the consensus opinion started to form that it was terrorists. I mean, wasn't it like 3 or 4 o'clock? It wasn't until 3 or 4 o'clock that afternoon that they had started to say that, right?
It seemed pretty obvious to me. I don't remember when, but I mean, it seemed when you have a coordinated attack on three different sites plus, you know,
it seemed
like that to me. So let's take a quick pause and get traffic on the fives. PJ?
There is a vehicle crash, Michigan Avenue and Mobile Highway in Pensacola. No roadblock there. Also still dealing with that vehicle crash and injuries, US 90 at Avalon Boulevard in Milton. I'm PJ through traffic on the fives.
I remember the weirdest thing thereafter was driving and seeing no planes in the sky. Because I would drive past Lambert all the time, the airport in St. Louis, and just there's no airplanes. And then I remember when the flights resumed, every plane I saw in the sky I thought was going to blow up.
Yeah.
Just in my imagination, that's what I had become. And how long was it before they started resuming flights? It was at least days. Was it weeks?
11th was Tuesday.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, interesting because I was stuck in Chattanooga.
Yeah, yeah.
I had
couldn't get out, right?
Myself, the two students, and the pilot, we had our flight suits. And so off to Walmart, we went to get some shorts and a flip-flop. And we didn't know how long we were going to be there. They were coordinating trying to get us home. But then the conversation quickly turned to rental cars.
Which were not available.
All the rental cars were out.
Right.
Because people were stuck and scooping those up. We were, so the 12th, we were there. The 13th was open for military repositioning, which we fell under that umbrella. So we were able to
fly get back home 2 days later. Okay.
That was an extremely bizarre flight. Because same, really not comprehending everything that's going on. Is an attack still continuing?
Right.
Like, what do we expect?
What's phase two and three, right?
Who knows? Phase two, three. We were the only airplane talking to the controller. So, you know, we were the only ones airborne, kind of Chattanooga down to Pensacola. So it was we were having conversations with the air traffic controllers.
Whose only job at that time was to talk to you.
I mean, yeah, because we were the only airplane.
What else would you do? Right.
But you pull that confusion goes into even, you know, we had cell phones at the time, but I didn't fly with a charger. So my wife, Dana, is here. She's by herself. Mm. All that's going on. I call and say, hey, I'm on deck in Chattanooga. I'm safe. Are you safe?
Yeah.
But what is happening?
Right.
And, you know, so communication wasn't as easy as it is now, you know, ability to text with speed. But, yeah, as people put that picture together and what is going on throughout the day, and Dana's parents were, they were traveling on just a vacation.
Yeah.
They landed in, I forget, Houston or Dallas. Good on Larry. He immediately saw the TV and went and got a rental car. They're from Jacksonville, so they drove back, and they got to our house on the 12th. So they were there when I got back on the 13th. But, yeah, just, I mean, surreal time. And I think most of us that were alive and went through it, it doesn't seem like 25 years ago.
No.
Right? I mean, it.
Right.
Because I mean, it was so impactful, and everyone remembers where they are. And, you know, the
importance of. It's so vivid that it seems recent.
Telling that story because, Josh, you said it changed the nation. It changed the world. It changed, you know, we had a protection of distance and two big oceans around America that is, I think you said, the curtain kind of went down. That changed. I mean, even you look at hijackings at that point were to get some kind of awareness or whatever. You took the plane and you went and landed somewhere. And
the rule was comply. Comply with the hijackers. They're just taking you to Havana. You know, no big deal.
So everything changed. And then, you know, the impact I had direct with that student finishing their flight and they were done with training.
Yeah.
A year later, they're
deployed or training. Yeah, right.
Out, you know, fighting the war. And then I happened to, when I was in the Pentagon, you know, two decades later, before I moved back down here to be the Commodore, on a watch floor, I run into him and he's waiting to go to take command of his own squadron. So,
As a Navy guy and an Air Force guy, you know, 20 years later, wow. Yep. You know, I was talking about this on the air a little bit earlier that it's a very understandable thing for people who are old enough, you know, let's say, 45 plus. I mean, you know, you're 38, Josh, right? 30, okay. Yeah. So you remember it vividly. But it probably didn't mean as much to you as it did more to the adults, okay? You know, who were already, you know, 20, 25 at least. But it's for us, it was so formative in so many different ways. And then, you know, there are kids who, you know, were not alive. I mean, you know, if you're under 30, you don't remember it.
One of my employees, I mean, he learns about it like I learned about Pearl Harbor.
Right, that's it.
This historical event.
It dawned on me yesterday or this morning as I was driving in that I was born in 1971, Pearl Harbor 1941. The distance of my life from Pearl Harbor is about the same as the distance of, you know, kids who were born today to 9/11. Like, that's crazy. It's just a thing that happened in history, which is normal.
It's normal, and you live it. You said it's. I remember having that moment when I heard it on the radio or something back in 2019 or whenever it was, of from this point forward, every student hearing about 9/11 in school wasn't alive, so it truly is a history lesson. And that, too, hits you because you're like, wait a second, it's not. Cause you
and it's hard to wrap your brain around what it means for people to have only learned about it through, like, being told. But there's also this kind of, like, how dare we not drill into people and almost bring them to the same level of trauma that we experience. There's like something missing if they don't.
They'll have their own.
They
trauma,
will have stuff
I'm sure.
happen. Yeah, so, you know, and you know,
I am curious because I remember, I was 13 and it felt for one of the first times in my life like I was aware now of the adult world.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I had a 90s childhood. I'll always be thankful for having a 90s childhood. But looking back, it seemed like, you know, the techno-optimism of the 90s, the economic surge of the 90s, the sort of halcyon days of the 90s officially drew to a close. And forever afterward, America took a much more paranoid, neurotic posture towards international relations. But as people who were already adults, do you sort of separate your life as or your understanding of American diplomacy and politics as pre-9/11, post-9/11?
Well, so I'm old enough to have remembered celebrating the fall of the Berlin Wall. And, you know, living the Cold War and duck and cover. And I was worried about nuclear bombs because we live near Chicago. I'm like, that's going to be a target for sure. You know, that's kind of where I was. And then when the wall falls, it's like, you know, Francis Fukuyama, the end of history. That's it. We're done. You know, all golden era from here on out. Right, you know, it's all going to be, you know, rainbows and unicorns from here on out. And then, you know, 9/11, which, you know, there were prefatory events, obviously. Yeah. There was the coal. There was the first bombing of the World Trade Center. There was, you know, but these are small things. These are minor skirmishes. I mean, you know, We'll send in a few cruise missiles. We'll take out an aspirin factory.
They were seen
fine,
as
you know?
One-offs, whereas 9/11 was more concerted.
And all of a sudden, you know, a thing that obviously if you've read Tom Clancy or whatever, you know, people, it's not that there was no idea this could happen, but there's not really. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the whole world changes and we change the way we travel and we change the way we war. And we, you know, one of the things, Scott, that I was thinking about for you is, you know, the pilots who volunteered for World War II because they had just become 18 or 19, you know, people who were like in, you know, 1943, they volunteered. And then what they got, you know, by the time they were done training, the war was over. And so they fell in that gap period between, you know, that and Korea, right? And so, and that's even in the movie, you know, was it Devotion, right? Where they, you know, they had that kind of experience, and some of these guys have been around for a while, but they'd never had any actual combat. Well, very different for the War on Terror, because, you know, if you enlisted in 2001, you had opportunities
for a couple years after.
You know, and even still, right? We're still deployed around the world. We're still engaged in all of this stuff, right?
Well, and I got commissioned in 95, and that was never lost on me in my career. So in 95 to 2001, a different world.
Yeah.
I mean, I did two deployments and flew over Iraq, and it wasn't like, you know, there was a bunch of friendly stuff going on, but it was not what happened after 9/11. And to that point, all the people I served with, and you'd hear that they joined in 2002 or 2008, or you know, and that realization that you are saying, I'm going to go serve my country. Right. And that, you know, part of that to keep playing on Josh's term of the curtain falling down. You know, Andrew, you mentioned like the coal and there was that's what changed. What changed on 9/11 was if something happened to someone, a military unit like the coal. Right.
Yeah.
Tragic event. And in the grand scheme of things, very horrible and an indicator, but very easy for a lot of people to kind of just say, well, it's the military. That's what they're trained to do. That's what they kind of expect. And they're out there fighting. Where 9/11 brought all that here.
It felt like we all got attacked.
Because we did, right? We did. The nation got attacked. And from that point forward, when you kind of asked Andrew what has changed, is a lot more of a, you know, you can't afford to get attacked.
Right.
Right. If you see a threat out there, do you need to go handle the threat? Which is a very, very tougher decision to make. Very easy to say, we've been attacked like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
We are now in World War II.
Right.
Right. Very tougher to say, you know, and even current events. What is this motivation of this country or this regime? What are they going to do? Do we go involve almost preemptively from
which is where we've been at kind of and to your point, Josh, about how we felt. I think, you know, we saw, you know, Iraq won and we're like, war is easy. You know, I mean, you know, we always win. We're America. Right.
Well, there was a sense of invulnerability.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Suddenly, the '90s was, you know, there's only one superpower. We're it.
Right.
You know, what are you going to do? Well, we found out, right? hang on for just a second. PJ has traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash, Navarre Parkway at Navarre School Road in Navarre. No roadblock there. I'm PJ through traffic on the fives.
You know, I wanted to, I hadn't actually intended we'd only talk about this, but I mean, certainly worth it. I was thinking about this today that, you know, in the context of things you remember, right? And, you know, does this generation, the kids who were not alive for or barely remember 9/11, you know, have they had a thing, you know, like this happened in their lifetime? Maybe Charlie Kirk, which was the 1 year yesterday, although that's important for some people, not important necessarily for everybody. Maybe the president getting shot, surviving, obviously, thank God. But I was thinking that, particularly in the context of Iran, you know, we are in a war now that if we had not done, it's entirely plausible to imagine a massive catastrophe coming as a result of our inaction. You know, President Trump, of course, is, I mean, he's been alive since the 40s. Like, he's been alive for a long time. He's seen
since Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of wars, a lot of threats, a lot of things come and go. And, you know, I think that though the president hates war, I think the president also recognizes that inaction produced 9/11. You know, maybe inaction or indifference produced the Pearl Harbor. You know, like, he's seen these kinds of things before. And in his mind, he's like, I don't want to be the president that enabled Iran. I don't want to be the president that leads to the thing that we have, that we look back on and say, why didn't anybody do anything? I'm going to do something. Do you, I mean, whatever you think about the progress of the war, do you feel like that's a fair way to look at it?
I'll let the military evaluate
it. Well, no, because it's a...
They work for you,
it's
though.
It's a societal, you know? Societal yeah. discussion, yeah. right? There's, you know, if you have a crystal ball and say, you know, this regime's going to do something like, you know, Iran, talk right. of nuclear weapon. If they got a nuclear weapon, what would they do with it, right? It's always, those are the tough decisions of when you're trying to make a decision of what would happen in the right. future vice what would happen in the past. And you brought the kids into play. And that is what I see has changed. And Josh, as you were talking about your experience of 9/11, reminded me of them pulling the TV for the Challenger when I was in yep. seventh grade,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And that's where our children, I feel, have a different thing, whether it's, I mean, my daughter had seen the Charlie Kirk video when he got shot probably 20 times by the time
right, on her
I
phone,
got to her
right.
and said, don't
yeah.
watch it. You know, so what they're shown, what they see and inundated with, and I'm not your producer, but it is.
We're almost done.
59. Well, no, it's 59, is, and that's when the South Tower fell. I don't know if you want to take
oh, no, that's a good point. I always put it on my list every year to remember, but, yeah, no, you're exactly right. 8:59 was when the South Tower collapses. The final, the Shanksville, Pennsylvania plane is going to go down in 4 minutes. So that means that the people on that flight, they were rallying right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were rushing right now. They were, you know, let's roll right now, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Have you seen that movie, United 93?
I've seen all of it. Yeah. No. Well, I didn't mean for it to all be about this, no, but I'm glad we had the conversation. Scott Janik and Josh Newby, dear friends, thank you so much.
5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3, WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.